you guys, I'm here with Dr. Dee Dee of Divinity. She is, she has a YouTube channel. I actually was, I interviewed by her, on her, channel that she was part of, was the Bitcoin channel, Women of Bitcoin. Is that what it's called? It's
Women of BSV, but it's Bitcoin SV.
Right.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago. And, but now she's kind of, segueing into her own history channel, where she's going to be doing some compilations of, well, some audiobooks, which are really good. Her voice is like very sultry and amazing, and she's amazing. You guys will love her. Anyway, we were just having a juicy conversation about the inflation levels of, like, what the hell, like, the oppression of all this stuff. And I mean, Dee Dee knows her stuff with Bitcoin and everything, so we were about to get into Epstein, which is such a wonderful topic here. So we're just going to like record and let you guys, we don't even know exactly 100% what all we're going to talk about today, but
we'll see where it goes.
We'll see where it goes. Enjoy the ride. Okay. So what were you saying about Bitcoin?
Okay. Recently I was watching this new documentary that's come out, which is about the Zorro Ranch, and the Zorro Ranch was owned by Epstein, and it's in,
is that the one in New Mexico?
So what also happened recently is there is an investigation going on. So Gary Gensler from the SEC, from the SEC, and with Wall Street and the shorting, trade shorts, okay? And there was a big fire in literally the warehouse where Wall Street keep all their paper documentation and all the documentation and all the evidence, and it's one of the biggest warehouses in the States with all this financial, you know, evidence in it, right? And it all went up in flames, and there was like JCB stuff, you know, just investigation, it just happens, all the evidence has just gone up in flames. And I was wondering, though, this for me, and with the COVID situation, because it's the same players, and Epstein was one of those players, are we still in the grips of the Epstein investigation that is literally going to continue and continue? Because I know in my country, because I'm from the UK, there were over 10,000 investigations going on at one point because of the COVID fiasco and the monetary fiasco and the fact that all the governments are literally bankrupt, and they've been bankrupt for years, and they're all in debt, and inflation's going through the roof, and like we were talking about, housing prices literally going through the roof, and how much food is costing and everything. So I was just kind of putting that around there, because, you know, crypto's collapsed, all the exchanges are collapsed there.
That guy, have you been following the story of the submarine thing, the people who were looking for the Titanic? Two of the five people who were in that, like, one guy was this billionaire, and then the other one was some guy who was, I don't know what he does in the World Economic Forum, but something in finance. He was the one that had like one of the kids. Anyway, the billionaire guy who was perished in the Titanic thing, he was starting a new Bitcoin thing too, and or whatever, a new digital currency, and like they both had some hand in that. And then you have like the guy from Cash App got murdered a couple months ago.
Oh, that was recently as well,
like I just feel like there is an attack on these, like, you know, you're Miss Bitcoin lady. There's an attack on these alternative avenues. But really what we have going on here is, I mean, like the Epstein thing, it was just like a giant honeypot, sting operation to blackmail a bunch of people, I feel like, I guess. Like that's, if I had to summarize it for, you know, somebody. And then I'm thinking to myself, it's because what really goes on is that we're run by a criminal syndicate. Like, a global one world mafia. That's what we're run by. Like, doesn't matter whether you want to say that's reptilians or that's the Rothschilds or that, I don't care who they are. What they are is a criminal syndicate. And they run all of our, somebody picked up the phone in 2020 and said, hey, shut the world down. And everybody followed suit. So we don't actually have real elected leaders anywhere that are their own autonomy. It seems to be like there's, whether it's corporate greed, if you want to go down that route, or if you want to go down whatever route you want to go down, we are run by criminals. So,
well, it's also it's basically a dictatorship. So whoever has the most money can fund your political parties, and that is who's going to win, because literally they've got the most money, the billionaires, and there's a certain few of them who, you know, fund a political party. That political party will win overall, whether or not the people want them in or not, and that's literally that. So it's kind of a dictatorship in that respect. And this is why I suppose, like, you know, I do feel that the investigations are still going on, and this is still part and parcel of it, because it's all tied together. It's all the money at the end of the day. Where does the money go? You have to watch where the money goes. But also the disclosure thing that just happened recently with Stephen Greer. Well, the way that I see this, and this could be, people will go, this is conspiracy, whatever, you know, is my grandparents, my granddad was in the RAF and he fought in the Second World War. Okay. And, you know, Stephen Greer and America and Wernher von Braun, who was the German scientists, came over, and all the top scientists came over to the US, and that's the rockets, and that's tied into the UFO thing at the South Pole, and all of that. And but that's where the money is as well. So you've got your industrial, you know, your military industrial complex, you've got your UFOs, your UAPs, all tied together. It's all tied to the financial markets. The financial markets are all tied to what is happening for every individual single person at the moment. They're still printing off money, but they put inflation up, still printing money. That's going over
to... And then, you know, your inflation rate is, or, well, your interest rates are set by, like, for us, I don't know, I guess it works like that, the same in the UK, but, like, I mean, what's Floyd's market, like the insurance company, what do they do for you? I don't know, like, I don't know where your inflation rates are set, but ours are with the, you know, the Federal Reserve, which is not really federal, and it's unelected officials, so we don't know who they are.
But ours is the Bank of England, so the Bank of England says, and they've just reset 0.5 to 5% today, I think that was, as well. So if we're going to go, I mean, that's not my forte, really. It's not my strong point. But if we're going to get, this is why, in a sense, Bitcoin and decentralization is actually really important, because what we've got at the moment is this central cartel. So you've got the Federal Reserve, like you say, it's not really, it was started up by basically a couple of people. You know, did you elect those people to be in charge of the money for literally world trade? Not really. You know, do you want these particular people running this kind of thing? So, I mean, that's another story as well, because if you follow that story, it goes back to literally the Europe, and with the Rothschilds starting the banking system, etc., and then bringing that over. So, and they've got a big hand in the Bank of England. The Bank of England for years was literally one of the biggest banks that everybody followed. So they set the rates and everything. But obviously now America being the world global power at the moment, but whether or not that's going to stay the same with BRICS and everything else that's happening, don't know, because that's quite a few. I mean, you've got Brazil, Russia, India.
Yeah, I don't know how this is going to shape
China. That's a lot of trade, a lot of trade. So basically, this centralization isn't a good thing. This is why the monetary system is the way that it is at the moment, and it's not the best for people. But a decentralized monetary system is a lot
more. Here's my thing with that. Like, I would be, you know, in all of my heart of hearts, I'm an anarchist, right? Like, I just am, you know, and that's been weaponized to sound like, oh, that's like such like a bad word, but no, like not really, if you like really start looking into it. But anyway, the thing is like, I need to stop saying that word. I get so much criticism for using the word like all the time. I can't help it. It's my go-to filler word when my brain is trying to formulate what I'm about to say next. Anyway, like cryptocurrency in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful concept, you know, there's nobody can control it, and it's not like it's just set in the blockchain and all this good stuff. However, the criticisms are that there's nothing to back it, right? There's no, like, it's not, but we don't have that anyway. We don't have anything backing ours currently. We don't have any gold standard. We don't have anything. Like, they just decide to pump out cash for this or that. And I mean, but anybody and their mama's dog could technically start a coin. And so, like, I just don't understand how it's going to start really spending the way that we spend. Well,
cryptocurrency isn't Bitcoin. Cryptocurrency is literally a illegal security. So all cryptocurrencies, probably 99% of them, aren't registered with the SEC. And this is why you've seen the collapse of all the big exchanges like FTX and Binance, etc. Right. Because, and they're not backed by anything. Bitcoin, which is BSV, the ticker symbol is BSV, that is different. It's a commodity and it's backed by data. So it's, and it's a, because it's a triple ledger accounting system, but you can store data on it. So it's backed by data. It's backed by accounting data. This is a triple ledger accounting system. So basically it's open to the public. It's decentralized. So it's transparent. It's private, but it's transparent. Yeah. So you can see all of the transactions. You don't know who they are unless you do a complete investigation. The other thing is, it's not, you can seize Bitcoin. It is one of these things that, you know, if there was a big criminal cartel and they spent money laundering and they're using a Bitcoin address, like the FBI could freeze that address and then they could get a warrant from a judge in court and then they could actually reverse that transaction, or they could freeze that, you know, they can freeze that transaction and they can rescue or return the Bitcoin to whoever it was that, you know, it was stolen from. So there are things that are around and about in the ecosphere and that people hear about that aren't actually true. And the only reason I can say that, you see, also, I know Dr. Craig S. Wright, okay, he's my philosophy tutor, but also I really like Craig. I think he's a lovely person. But Dr. Craig S. Wright is aka Satoshi Nakamoto, and he is the guy that invented Bitcoin. Now, there will be loads of people out there that will be screaming at me and saying, no, he's not, he's a fraud. And all this, no, he's not a fraud. He's actually, Dr. Craig S. Wright is actually Satoshi Nakamoto, and he is actually the guy that invented Bitcoin. And if you actually did the research, or, you know, people out there did the research and they got to know Craig and you had a conversation with Craig, it would become so obvious that he is Satoshi. He's got Asperger's. He loves education. He's a computer scientist. He started off as a pastor. Now, this is where, like, the way that Craig thinks, he started Bitcoin with the Genesis block. And there's not many people out there that actually will go, oh, Genesis, Bible, Genesis, Genesis block. Ah, I sit and actually match that together and go, oh my gosh, it was Craig. It is Craig who's Satoshi. There are loads of other reasons, like that he is Satoshi, because he is Satoshi. He's been to court several times and already proved this, but people will say, well, no, the court case didn't da da da. But anyway, so he invented Bitcoin and he's my philosophy guy, philosophy teacher. And,
okay, so it's for those people who don't know who Shiitake is, like Satoshi. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like I'm talking about sushi or something, but okay, Shiitake Nakamoto or whatever. Like, explain that for people who are coming at this like 5-year-old.
Okay, so Satoshi Nakamoto is a pseudonym that was used by Dr. Craig S. Wright when he invented Bitcoin and put the Bitcoin white paper out there in about 2008, I think it was. So the Bitcoin white paper is about 9 pages long. It's copyright of Craig, so you can only find it hosted on Craig's website. So that's craigswright.net. And it was hosted by loads of people, and there was a court case about that for copyright, so he hosts it. So the white paper came out, and basically it explains about a decentralized digital currency. So it's called peer-to-peer electronic cash system. So it's a complete system. It's not just like, you know, me sending you a digital one. I'm in the UK. I can send you one penny over to yourself in Dallas, and it will go through like that, and it will cost like a thousandth of a cent. So literally, you won't, you know, you'll get the penny. So it's a cash system. It's a peer-to-peer cash system. But it's not just peer-to-peer cash, it's an entire system. So it's this is the triple ledger accounting system and the data storage system, and this is the NFT craze. So non-fungible tokens, and a lot of non-fungible tokens are basically JPEGs, yeah, which are on chain. So with cryptocurrency, say for example Ethereum, your NFT isn't actually on chain, it's on a server. So at any point they could turn that server off. Whereas on BSV, which is Bitcoin Satoshi's Vision, it's called Satoshi's Vision because it's Satoshi Nakamoto, and that's the vision that he had originally in the first place, and it's the one that follows the white paper. The NFT is actually on chain, so it's written on chain. So I think, I mean, I've never used Ethereum like to do an NFT, but I know that I tried to transact like $5 once a couple of years ago, and it was $5 for the fee to send $5. Yeah, and I'm like, what? This isn't a cash system. How's this going to work? So I know some people have said that when they uploaded an NFT, it was like ridiculous, like £50 or something, £50 or something. Well, if I upload a NFT, say I want to sell a piece of artwork and I put the NFT up there and that acts as my receipt and that's also a token to represent the art, then it's going to cost me like 40p or even cheaper than that. I've put music up on chain that's cost me, I think, 20 pence for a 6-minute track on the Bitcoin SV network. So this is where it's like storage. So you can store music, you can store images, you can store data.
I feel like, is the NFT thing kind of dying down? Because it was super, like, their mama's dog was talking about it. And then now I feel like kind of gone down.
I mean, there are still, I mean, Johnny Depp has got his a series of NFTs. So, you know, I mean, he's got 28 million followers on Instagram. So, you know, I think there's plenty of people still in the NFT market, but there's not so much hype. And I think most of that is to do with the fact that, and this is something Craig said about 3 years ago, is like, well, all of these exchanges, you know, all cryptocurrency that's out there at the moment is literally illegal security, and everybody will be going to zero, which is kind of what's happening.
But at the same time, do we, I mean, that's if you put a lot of faith and trust in our legal system. Like, because that's the other thing. The reason, like, why cryptocurrencies in general are appealing to some people is, like, if you have a fall of complete government decline, which we've seen happen in other countries, like, how much faith do you have in our judicial systems? You know, well, I mean,
this is it, isn't it? I mean, like he I know he wrote Bitcoin with common law legalese and universal law and natural law and everything in mind. But I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, the other thing, one of the things, and this is, you know, if this was the case and it could happen this way, it'd be absolutely wonderful. But I think, you know, might be a bit naive to think that this could happen. If governments adopted Bitcoin SV and they used it for internal government processes and actually communicating and paying each other, so if governmental departments were paying each other with on the blockchain, and that was all decentralized,
it would be 100% transparent.
Transparent. That would be a great thing. It would be a great thing for the government and for the or us and humanity, because we could see what was going where and where the wastage wasn't, but at the time it's happening. But I think it's probably a bit naive of us to think that the governments are going to take on this system, because I saw one congressional hearing where the DOD had lost $8 trillion and they just laughed about it. So I don't think at least the US government would like to use a system like Bitcoin.
Like our government is set up into some sort of system of, it's basically you only prevail if you're a psychopath or if you're able to be bought. like that's the kind of people that we have. I mean, and I'm sure some people have, I don't know if they're good or bad. I don't know any of the politicians personally, but it just seems like it's the whole entire system is compromised.
Democracy is suffering quite a lot, and this is actually quite interesting because the philosophy course, I'm sort of down as an assistant lecturer on it. We did quite a lot of like Greek philosophy and Aristotle, and you know, that kind of the setting up of the legal system and the political system. And really, there's not a lot change because you've still got this small group who are kind of dictating their opinions and
well,
their way.
They're calling it a democracy, but it's really technically, it's a democratic republic is technically what the United States system is. But yeah, I mean, if we think that voting every 4 years for, you know, some figurehead is democracy, that's not democracy.
No, not at all. Will the implementation of something like a decentralized money system help? I don't know. I mean, one thing you could do on the Bitcoin network, on a BSV network, is actually voting. So you could do like use each token would have an individual number, and somehow you could do a voting system on chain, so that you could find again any fraud, you know, outright. It would be a fair and you know, a fair.
That would be an interesting way to do it. I mean, I also think that they have, I heard about this place like many years ago. I don't know if it still works or if they were running it, but it was a county region in Argentina that basically gave every citizen in this like small region an app. And they got to, instead of having like a mayor or a city council, they would have just an administrator, administration office. And what they would do, and they were the ones who you registered and made sure that your address was within the regions of this county or whatever. And apparently you would vote based, if it's like, do we need to put a new road in here? Like we have this amount of funds. Does the new road need to go in here, or should we put a stop sign here, or, you know, just like, should we put a speed bump on this road right here? There's like some people, a lot of speed, like they had actual data statistics. And then if you were part of the county, you got to vote where you wanted, like the options of where you were going to allocate your tax money to go to. And so it was an example of digital direct democracy. And and whenever they voted for constituents in the higher government things, it would be like people on the app got to vote or whatever. I don't know that that ended up staying or that that's still going. I know that they did a test run about 10 years ago with it. So, but to me, when I heard that, I thought, well, that would be something if we could, if based on your region of where you lived, you actually, cause I mean, we are all on dicking around on, you know, whatever social media things, whatever there, I could take 5 minutes of my day to think about things that actually concern me, like a whether or not, you know, whether or not we're going to have this sales tax raised or this thing or whatever. And I can, and I would put regionally something that physically affects me, I would vote on that as on a daily basis or a weekly basis, maybe. But
it's interesting you say social media as well, because obviously like on BSV there is social media channels already. So I know Elon Musk has been talking about kind of
making like Twitter like a financial
So there is Twedge, which is like Twitter, but it's on the BSV blockchain. So you post a Twedge, and that's etching like a tweet to the blockchain, basically. And if somebody likes that, then you pay, I think it's like 3p to permanently post a Twitch onto the blockchain. But also what you've got to consider here is There are in the European Union, there's a law like the right to be forgotten. So you have to also make it so that you can like hide and delete something. So it won't delete off the blockchain, but what you can do is encrypt it so that it can only be seen by a person with an encryption key, if that makes sense. So that's kind of how you get around the right to be forgotten, but it's also privacy as well. And there's like a version of Instagram called Lemint, which is also on the blockchain as well. So social media again. So what you do is you upload your photo, but that goes onto the blockchain, and that's for free. And then like literally that turns into an NFT because it's on the blockchain. And then if somebody comes along and presses the like button, you as the content creator can make like 3 or 4 pence from that photo. So I think we probably had a conversation about this in the past, actually.
Well, I think this is when you were explaining Midjourney to me, which thank you for doing that, even though
Midjourney is like the AI as well, because this is, you see, the other thing is there are 12 million BSV, no, 21 million Bitcoin, and there are 12 zeros, right? So the internet currently is on IPv4, but the internet is going to move to IPv6. So when this is also a reason for Bitcoin, when the internet came about and it started being used by individuals such as ourselves, and it got really popular, and Tim Berners-Lee put it out there, he didn't have anything as a payment gateway. So you got everything that you can do on the internet, but there was no payment gateway. So this is where you've got now third parties, like PayPal is a third party, or MasterCard is a third party, Visa is a third party, you know, all these things are third parties. What Bitcoin does is take away the third parties, and it puts that payment gateway onto the internet that Tim Berners-Lee couldn't figure out how to do. So this is also like, Craig knows Tim Berners-Lee, you know, roughly, you know, they were around the same time.
I don't know who Tim Berners-Lee is. Who's Tim Berners-Lee?
He's the guy that like is basically credited as inventing the internet. So
oh, there you go. Okay, and I don't even know who that is. Sorry, so, I'm an idiot, y'all.
I'm a nerd as well, so, but there's only certain things I'm really nerdy about. This I'm nerdy about. I'm nerdy about, like, you know, AI stuff. I'm nerdy about the theater. I'm nerdy about like frequencies and stuff as well, and history. So he invented the internet. So basically, Craig's come along, he's thought about this for years and years and years and years and years, and he's come up with the thing that Tim couldn't figure out, and that is how to do these micro payments and nano payments over the internet, so the AI can. And basically all of your, like, your devices, you know, these, like, Internet of Things devices, these IoT devices, which talk to each other, can pay each other for talking to each other in nano payments. So they could pay, like, a millionth of a cent. An AI could pay an AI a millionth of a cent to find some information. So instead of, say, for example, ChatGPT, I think there's a version that's free, which is like the Microsoft version on Bing, and there's a version that you pay for. Well, the version that you pay for, it's one of these things where it breaks it down. You wouldn't have to pay a subscription fee monthly. You would just pay for what you use, but you could do it with Bitcoin on the internet. And this payment gateway is the peer-to-peer gateway. So there's no third party involved. So it gets rid of Visa, it gets rid of MasterCard, it gets rid of all, you know. And that's when, on a bigger scale, because it could do the volume that there is and the amount of zeros, Bitcoin SV could do all of world trade 50 times over at this current moment in time, right? So there's a lot of zeros in there, and it's the speed of light. It operates at the speed of light. So it's the missing
thing. I get a little bit like alarm bells kind of go off in the back of my head is, even if this is beautiful, awesome, and gorgeous, and brilliant, I don't like the idea of, it feels like there's a vying for one, like it's like one ring to rule them all kind of thing. And so it feels like we're watching almost like some sort of competition for, this is the best coin, this one is the, you know, like whatever. And
oh,
I
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I also, Don't you kind of feel like there needs to be multiple avenues? Like, we can't have one globalized currency. We can't have
Oh
like.
no, and that's not, it's not really, like, I don't really watch any, like, the only reason, it's because I had, right, I came across Craig because of philosophy and history, and then I realized he was a computer scientist who invented Bitcoin, so I've come at it's a completely different angle, so I'm not really interested in what's going on because I believe that Craig's invention is good enough the way that it is, and it does everything that it needs to do, and it's legal within the bounds of law that we operate in, that, you know, that we have to operate in. But it doesn't have to be a world currency. It what it's a brilliant way for banks to be able to make cross-border payments without paying those stupid fees. So if I wanted to send you money from the UK over to the US via my bank account, I'm going to get charged a blooming fortune for that, and it's going to take 5 or 6 days. Whereas with BSV, I, like I say, I can send you a penny in a split second, and it's cost me like a thousandth of a
Anytime
cent.
I do these like tours, like where I go to like Egypt or Peru or whatever, and like to
Exactly.
transfer my, it's at least $50 wire
Yeah.
transfer fee,
Yeah.
at least.
So that is a brilliant idea. That's great. We all need that. That would really help even the banking system because there's so much wastage. Also, like, it helps to prevent fraud. Like, it's so easy to commit fraud. I used to run a Santa's Grotto, and, like, you know, Visa payments all the time. You probably do it yourself. It's really easy for someone to nick somebody's Visa and just swipe it. And you do you know what I mean? If you, like, there's so much fraud, like monetary fraud, especially in this country, every single year, and it runs into the billions. And this is card fraud with Visa and MasterCard. So it's also
I
something
feel like
that actually.
remember when cell phones first came out, like they got stolen all the time. And I do feel like the face identification or the whatever, as horrible as I was against that at the beginning, now I'm kind of going, I do think that has kind of detracted a lot of fraud, like the locking security of our phones. Like people are just kind of like, yeah, I can't get
I
in
mean,
there.
it depends on how you're looking at it, which angle you're coming from, and whether or not you trust people. I'm like, I don't trust anyone. I'm like the biggest, you know, skeptic out there, really, at the end of the day. But I do know that there is some, you know, something needs to be done because there are a lot of very innocent people who are being targeted, and they are having literally their life savings stolen off them. Or, and this is this, you know, BSV is a way of being able to not stop it, but combat it and reduce it and trace everything. So, you know, I don't want people tracing every penny I spend, but if I've got my money is being stolen, I want it traced, you know. So you have to weigh up what it is that you is important to you. And this, so with it being the thing that was missing for IPv4, with IPv6, which is going to be the Internet of Things, Bitcoin will be like
Really
literally
understand
the
the Internet
internet
of
will
Things.
be. Well, the internet will be built onto the IPv6, which will be the newer version of the internet to accommodate all the AI and all the machines on the Internet of Things, like you know, your Alexa and your fridge that talks to you, and you know, all of these things that, you know, all of these smart machines and stuff, and your car and everything. You know, Elon Musk was on about if you're driving in the car and it will clock up like crypto for actually driving so many miles or whatever. Literally. You need, like, Craig's got about 2,500 patents in blockchain as well and Bitcoin technology. So the internet will be built on BSV, basically, because it's the only coin that scales. Now, this is a problem, is the scaling. If it doesn't scale, then it's a useless coin. It's not going to go anywhere. And this is the issue. The issue is none of them do actually scale, but BSV actually scales. So that's another thing, yeah. So
Well, I'll have to get some of this BSV. I have just regular Bitcoin, but I don't think it's
it's really cheap at the moment. I mean, it's like £23, you know. You can't go wrong with that. And actually, there's the wallet hand cash. I mean, people are like, well, what am I going to spend it on? Well, actually, there's loads of things you can spend it on. Hand cash itself is like a little wallet that you can store your BSV in, but also, you know, you can then buy gift cards if you wanted to somewhere down the line. But there's actually a real, there's like loads of little apps that you can use that you use with BSV, like for example, Lemin or Twitch. There's like Streamable, which is like a music streaming platform. There are podcasts and things. So you could put your podcast onto, say, Real World BSV, Real World Podcasts, and people literally pay you for the amount. So literally, you put your podcast on YouTube, and if you get an advert, you'd be paid a minute fee for an
Yeah.
advert, right? So what BS Real World BSV is, you could say, okay, well, I'm going to charge 50 cent for each single video that I put up, and I'd pay 50 cent to watch one of your videos. Or you could put 10 cent to watch your video. Or you could do like, okay, well, I'm going to charge 1/100,000th of a penny for every minute that you watch. And after, you know, if you've had 10,000 of those, then you're gonna get something back. Not a lot, you know, but something. So it's just a, it's that, like I say, it's just that missing link of that peer-to-peer payment on that's missing. And instead of aggressive advertising, you know, you can get rid of the advertising and just get peer-to-peer payments and stuff. Not everybody's gonna like it. Not everybody's gonna want to use it. The
Yeah.
Chinese won't, because they want it centralized. You know, and BRICS is there to, what they're doing is their monetary system is going to be backed by gold. So Bitcoin is backed by data, and data is the new oil, apparently. You know, so it depends.
So
It depends.
what's your DD's really, she's in all the AI stuff. She does some
Not
digital
all
marketing.
of it.
No, okay, but you do use a lot. You're always kind of down with some of like you work with the AI stuff. So actually, like even if for as an example, show them like your book and or some of your books and how you did like the mid like how the practicalities of that.
Well, I if you okay, so if you really want to keep up to date with AI, I would recommend watching Matt Wolf, because he's awesome, and he's got like this website blog that he does where he updates it every single week about all the news that's happening in AI. So he's a brilliant person to follow. But yeah, okay, so this
Matt
is
Wolf.
Matt Wolf, as in Wolf, WOLFE. He's on YouTube. Okay, so
Okay.
Matt, but he's really up with the AI stuff. So I have been using Midjourney, and I use Kyber, because that's animation, and I'm really into Kyber at the moment. There's a couple of other things that I use as well. One actually turns like a flat image into a 3D, that gives it a 3D depth of field, and makes it seem like it moves around a little bit. So that's quite cool. There are some really, because I produce music as well. I don't know if you know that, but I'm, you know, play the saxophone, produce music. And there's like Meta have just come out at the moment with a AI music program that literally you just type in an idea of, say, I want blues, rap, bluegrass, right? And it could give you a 30-second sample in about 10 seconds of a 30-second bluegrass rap, whatever, yeah, track. There's another one where actually you can type in some lyrics, and it will put a voice and music to the lyrics that you type in. It takes again about 30 seconds. It's bizarre. There's like two voices that you can hear. There's a thing called DID, which is really good, which you could put a still photo. I could get a still photo of you, put it through DID, and turn you into a 3D avatar, and then maybe stick my voice on it. So I've got you speaking in my voice as a
Okay, so
3D
is this how they're
avatar.
doing those deep fakes? You know how they have those like Instagram accounts where they have like I don't know the one it's called like Brian Monarch is one of the ones I like right now where it'll have like Arnold Schwarzenegger singing like I want to dance with somebody like as if he's Whitney Houston and he's on like Whitney Houston's face and I want to dance with somebody.
Clock strikes upon the hour and the sun begins to fade. Still enough time to figure out how to chase my boobs away.
Yeah, well, that was like, it was a was it a face swap?
Yeah, some kind of thing like that.
Yeah. So there's a, you see, I do video editing. You do video editing. I mean, Da Vinci and Runway. So Da Vinci, like, is a really great video editor, and he's what all the, but it's by Blackmagic, and Blackmagic make cameras, professional cameras for the film industry. So Blackmagic have been the head of the game for years and years and years, and they've got a 12K camera at the moment. Now, you just think about what a 12K camera is. Because you know, we've got 4K on
it. Crazy, yeah.
Yeah. So Blackmagic, you know, they sort of DaVinci related, and DaVinci is a editor, and it's free, which is great, but there are certain components that you can buy. So if you want the to use the AI, you probably have to pay a couple of quid for it to add it to, you know. But there's another one called Runway, and Runway is a really great AI video editor. And so again, I could take a short video segment of yourself, put it through Runway, and turn you into clay animation in like literally 10 seconds, you know, or faster than that. Or I could put you, turn you into a futuristic like Blade Runner kind of, you know, character. Wow. So, or turn you into fluffy pink candy floss, you know. So these things are great, and I love it. And it, like, for example, if you do an interview and there's like really big gaps of silences in an interview, you can put that through Runway, and you just like literally put in, oh, okay, so anything over 3 seconds of silence, you know, take 2 seconds out so there's only 1 second of silence, and then leave it to it, and it will do that instead of you going,
oh, that would help me a ton, actually.
So yeah, there's loads of, like, in painting, which is also cool, because in painting, if you take some video, I've done this before a few times, you take some video and there's maybe a kid in the video, but actually you haven't got permission to have that child in a video. Okay, so I come from a TV background, so really if you're filming people, you need permission to be able to film someone, or you go to a location, you're supposed to get permission, but everybody's got phones these days, so we don't really do it. However, if there's a child in, you know, accidentally in a piece of video, you just go to Runway and you go in painting and you paint over that child, and literally zoom, it's gone. Child disappears. You've painted them out of the picture. So that sort of thing is really useful, you know, because you don't need to do frame by frame. You can start, say it's like a 15 seconds worth of, you know, a child is in view and you need that child taken out. You go to the first frame, you go to the last frame, and literally paint round on the child on the first frame, paint round the child on the last frame, and then it could just take that 15 seconds worth of child out, which is awesome. So they're just really little good tricks. So I like the video editing stuff. So
yeah, show us your Midjourney.
Okay, so I have a niece who I absolutely adore, and it was her birthday and I wanted to do something nice for her birthday. So I used Midjourney and I put a picture of myself through Midjourney, and I wrote my niece a series of 6 children's books, and they're called Clara Rose. Okay, and this is the first one. So Clara Rose and the Enchanted Forest of Mystara. So they're Clara Rose's adventures in the mysterious, in mysterious Mystara. Okay,
so Mystara is like your world you created.
Yeah, so it's this imaginary world, because she walks, she goes through portals. She's on the beach one day and she finds like a crystal on the beach, and then she's magically transported to the mysterious island of Mystara. Okay, so what I did was, I didn't want to use an image of my niece, yeah, so I used an image of myself when I was like 4 or 5, and I put that through Midjourney, and you can keep the kind of consistency of the character all the way through. So, you know, because obviously, you know, it's privacy. There's no privacy there, because this is me. I've given permission to use my photo as a child,
right,
and
right.
I've turned that into a book, right? So there's no privacy issues or anything. So I wrote, you know, so they're all different kind of, you know, but they're kind of fairly consistent. You can tell it's the same character. It took me ages to do that. So I've literally, you know, that was the original photo and everything else has come from that photo and that's prompting. So if you're a prompter, if you know how to prompt properly, you can make magic. And there's a jobs, I don't know if you've heard of these jobs or not, but they're called AI whisperers. And there's a lot of AI whisperers needed at the moment. And basically what that is a prompt engineer. So if you're good at prompting, you can make £350,000 a year from being an AI
whisperer. Yeah, one of my good friends, he's a computer programmer, and he was telling me that I need to take, he's like, you should take a class on how to be a better prompter with like ChatGPT or whatever. And I was like, why? And he's like, because that's the future. And I'm like, okay. He's like, knowing how to talk to the AI, like knowing how to get the most productive things.
Well, Bard came out recently as well. So Bard is Google's AI, right? So if you tell Bard what you want Midjourney to do, Bard will write a prompt for you for Midjourney.
Oh, and nice. You can get it to tell you to, yeah.
So the same with Kyber. So literally, you kind of just... you know, whatever you can envision, you tell Bard what it is and he'll write, but he will write the prompt for you. Okay.
Well, so, I'm considering, look, I'm at the very basis or the very first step of trying to create my own conference, like maybe sometime in 2024.
Oh, sweet.
I don't know that it'll happen, guys, but I'm just saying like, I'm like reaching out to venues and that kind of stuff. Right. So it's amazing on ChatGPT. I was like, write me. Well, first of all, I was like, where are some venues with 300 plus conference attendees and like whatever city I was going to try to do it in. I might just do it where I live, but let's see. Oh, I said, write a professional email that asks event venues for pricing and percentage deals for conferences between 250 to 400 people, period. That's one sentence I asked it. And it gave me like it gives me, dear venue, I hope that this email finds you well. And I'm reaching out to inquire about hosting a conference at your esteemed venue. We are in the process of planning an event that will gather between 250 to 400 attendees. After researching various venues in the area, your venue stood out to us due to its exceptional reputation and unique atmosphere. We would greatly appreciate it if you could provide us with the following information. 1. Venue pricing. Please share with your blah blah blah. Anyway, and 2, percentage deals. 3, event specialty. Like event, it goes down like all these. I from one sentence, it gave me this whole thing, and then at the end, it's like, we are open to scheduling a site visit to discuss details further. Could you please give me a, and it'll be like, you can contact me directly at, and it has brackets. Put your contact information here, and it's like, you know, thank you for your best regards, and put your name here, your organization name. I was just like, what? That is actually a pretty amazing email. I mean, I tweaked some stuff on it, right? I didn't want to sound like a complete robot, but at the same time, it helped me formulate my ideas like so much quicker. So
yeah.
I'm teetering on this level of scary. This is scary. And this is also kind of, but do like, I want to grab the bulls by the horn because it's coming anyway, or do I want to run from this bull? Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, because I was so conflicted for such a long time about it. I'm still conflicted because there's so many people that are losing their jobs because they're being taken over by, you know, AI or robots, but also as a tool, if you see it as a tool and you can use it to your advantage, as in such a way to speed up your productivity, it's fantastic if you do that. And interestingly enough, Bard, you know, Clara Rose, the Bard and the Bumblebee of Mastara, but also like Bard's, like the original, like in my master's that I did, which is in metaphysical sciences, Bards, I wrote about bards, and bards were originally Celtic composers of eulogies and satire, and the words came to mean like more generally a tribal poet singer who was gifted in composing and reciting verses on heroes and their deeds. But what they used to do is they would be used as the first kind of form of postmen. Yeah, so it's the way that you would actually, and you probably know this anyway because you're really into history, is that, you know, if you lived, say, in the Outer Hebrides and you needed to get a message to the king in London, you would have a bard that would travel and he would sing the songs over.
Oh, yeah, they were propaganda tools. Like
exactly,
the original propaganda.
Exactly. And one, like, you know, I worked in the theatre, so like one of my things is I love Shakespeare, and Shakespeare is known as, you know, the sort of, he's referred to as the bard, you know, which, you know, in his respect is kind of like meant the friend who writes the poems, so, you know, but yeah, a form of communication in such a phenomenal way to bring joy and happiness, but to be sung your news and your mail and your first kind of propaganda.
Well, and I mean, the thing is it's like, yeah, these tools can do things faster than us and they can outperform us in a lot of things, but they aren't creative in and of themselves. Like, you have to prompt them, you have to they're not just gonna create without the instruction to create.
You still need that human element. You say, and well, I mean, there is the point, though. I mean,
hopefully, for a while, we need it still.
I think, wasn't it, Elon? It might have been Elon Musk, I'm not sure, but somebody asked an AI to, like, literally make an AI. So an AI can make an AI already, because all it did is, like, it just got, you know, whoever prompted it told it that it needed an AI and used this coding language or something to make the AI, and that's.
Yeah. I mean, AI is, that's like a good example that I showed you, because like a lot of times I've just been using the free ChatGPT, but it pisses me off a lot and tells me that its information only goes up to 2018.
That's why you should start using Bard now, because Bard is free and it's Google. So Bard has access to all of Google up to date. It's still getting things wrong a little bit, but you can kind of put a link in and just tell it to have a look at the link, and it will absorb that information.
Website, like, you could be like, here, like, look at this link. And
yeah, I mean, I had a conversation with it and ages ago, and it said to me that Elon Musk wasn't a real person, he was an alien, and I just thought it was hilarious. It was really funny.
Hearing some crazy things that it, like, I'll even say, I asked it, how can I, like, what's a way that I can use ChatGPT as a YouTuber who does interviews with people? And it told me I can ask it, like, specific questions about a guest I'm going to have on, and it'll come up with, like, special answer, or, you know, it'll come up with some questions. So I would be like, okay, well, like I'm going to have Doctor of Divinity on, like, what should I ask her? And it basically will go through every public thing that you've spoken, or I guess in theory, it comes up with a giant list of questions that I should ask. Now, the questions is not a thing for me, because, like, I'm just having a conversation with people. I just go on based on, like, what I'm not like, okay, like, tell us about, I'm not that calculated with stuff. And I don't really need help in that particular field. So that's not exactly what I wanted, but it's scary, the kind of stuff that it's going through.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, literally, I think you and I, like, we've used the you know, the image make, you know, Midjourney and the images, yeah, and sort of asking questions and writing letters and things like that. I haven't used any of the coding, because you can get it to code things, and that's the side, you know, I've used the video editing and stuff, but the coding side of things as well is phenomenal, because there is now as well. I mean, this is what I saw on Matt Wolf the other day. This is why I recommend watching Matt Wolf, because he's really up to date on everything. But there's a wait list at the moment where it would, you literally ask it, tell it what kind of 3D game that you would like, and it will write you the code and all of the visuals, oh, wow, and all of the imagery for a complete 3D animated, basically visual game.
Because I had so many app ideas. Like I did this thing, like, in 2018, where I was trying to like write down 50 inventions every day, 50 new ideas, wow, every day. And it was a really interesting just challenge to make myself do. And I would come up with like entire ideas of just what it could be, apps, it could be like, you know, free energy machines, like all this stuff. I kept on like would go on and on and on. And I never did anything with any of it. But I remember there was a couple of really good apps that I even went and I talked to some programmers and like all this stuff. And this one asshat told me, he was like, unless you're a programmer, you really shouldn't be thinking about stuff to do, because you're just wasting your time and everybody else's, because everybody can code and it's not gonna be. Well, he can just eat his own words, because eventually, like, I will be able to like give that idea to something that will be able to code it and create me a actual site real quick, awesome, like, you know.
And that is definitely something that you can do with ChatGPT. I mean, we're on iteration 4 at the minute, so it's ChatGPT 4, isn't it? And then, I mean, they're already
And I
talking about
suppose that's
Reactive
only going to be
5.
getting better and better. But I mean, like, I would like it for real world data, like help me find every megalithic site in the world and put it into a bit database, and like help me put it into a map sequence app that's interactive, or you know, like every photo that we can find
Well,
on any site needs to
I
be.
mean, that could be something you could write an app about, isn't it? I mean, really, if you can get an app where you've got it can link people up from around the world that put images and things that help build that database, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like that would be cool if it, if you if I really could do that.
Ask people about nums. I'm still, I mean, I think you know what my theory is. I think climbing walls, I see them.
I liked that. Yeah.
I do think that they were probably something to do with helping people to be able to climb up the structure,
Some
especially when they don't
functioning.
want to be
Yeah,
able to go up
that could be.
the
I
fence.
mean, there's just nubs, man. Nubs are an interesting mystery, because like there's bedrock nubs that are like at the base of stuff. There's stuff that's like, are you know, that's actually on like the parent stone that's connected to the ground, you know. And then there's like some at top of columns. Like there's some that's like, you know, I don't know. They're all over the place. They're middle of walls, top of walls, bottom of walls, and weirdly weird nooks and crannies. They don't make any rhyme or reason. There's not a consistency thing about them. They're round, they're square, they're big, they're little, they pop out. I mean, but they are all unsightly, which is, you know, I just think that we're looking at a, I mean, I think that's with a lot of the old stuff. You know how I feel about the old stuff, but
Well, I mean, is like you say, it's worldwide. The pyramids are worldwide. Everything is connected somehow. This is why I kind of, the sort of biblical stories, even further back with Sumerian stories. Like, there's the in the Sumerian texts, there are stories of floods, and the biblical stories there are stories of floods. And then with Graham Hancock's series that he did as well, I mean, there is evidence of floods. It's not even Graham Hancock, there's evidence of the floods happening all over the world. I think there was a town in India that, it was like 9,000 years old, and people thought it was a myth. For the last 500 years, they thought it was a myth, and it's a really well-known kind of place in an Indian mythology, but it actually turns out it's real. It was actually, buried under the ocean 9,000 years ago. So structures are there and everything. It's just that the ocean rose and flooded over everything. So Earth's history is rather fascinating, to be
It
honest
really
with
is
you.
fascinating to me. And for me, it's like, I think the thing that I keep on getting hung up on is that our predecessors, even if you what however you want to look at that, they thought differently than we do, like
Oh, yeah.
spatially, like with the size of their stones, they're polygonal, like whether it's nubs or I mean just the way they built things. They thought differently than we think, and so I don't know that they were human in the same way that you and I are human. Like I don't know what they were. They could have been giants. They could have been like I don't know why we thought in a certain way at some point, and then don't think that way anymore. Like why did we build in pyramids? Why like what you know the pyramids aren't like yeah they're huge like all over. They're global, cool. but you can't go inside of them. It's not like you could hold like picnics and be like, all right, you guys, this is the White House. We're going to go in and hold a council. I mean, they're solid stone structures. Same thing with like mounds and stuff like that. Like, okay, well, there's a functionality and there's a way of thinking about that that we don't have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I worked in Egypt, in Cairo in 2012. So I did go to the Giza Plateau, and it is huge. I mean, you know, if it is a huge place, you know, I'm 5'2" and those blocks tower above me, you know. I unfortunately didn't go in because I get a bit claustrophobic and I was a bit worried, to be fair. So I didn't go in. So I do want to go back, and I would like to kind of, you know, spend a bit more time around there. But there is this certain, I don't know, is this just a certain vibration or atmosphere in the, you know, around the complex that you kind of, it just feels different from anywhere else.
Yeah, it does. Know. It's like, it was very overwhelming for me. I was just like, well, I need to go.
Oh, you've been inside.
Yeah, I've been inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had quite the experience inside.
Yeah.
But yeah, like people can just think I'm crazy or whatever, but, my mom was also with me. She went on the trip with me and she was claustrophobic and she went inside, but she wouldn't go, like, she wouldn't go up to the king's chamber or the queen's chamber or, you know, the subterranean. She wouldn't do any of that. She was just like hung out in the middle part where she could see the exit. It is very tiny. It is not meant for humans to be crawling in it. Like, especially when you're going down the subterranean chamber, you're bent over, like I'm 5'4" going like, oh my God.
Well, I mean, there's loads of different theories as well, because like they are resonant sound chambers. That's something that, you know, there is been, you know, the resonance that's in those chambers is something different. You know, there've been energy plants, or like, I think I saw somebody recently who said that it could be something to do with paint. You know, we talk with the chemicals, the black goo,
chemical.
They're not burial chambers. Why would they be? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So, but it would be great to know what they actually really were.
Yeah,
are they alien kind of, you know, communication towers, or, you know, they're on ley lines and everything, that they definitely
like
were built to withstand earthquakes and stuff like that.
I think they could be part of our terraforming of the planet or something. Like, that's a theory that I've heard proposed. That
sort of somatics. Okay, so vibration plates, sound, somatics, which is like, you know, the if you've got a vibrate, like Africa, this is where this originates from anyway, with Africans with the drums and the animal skin, and you beat it and you drum and you put sand on it and you beat, and then that vibration, and then that turns the sand into a specific pattern, which is a geometric pattern,
right.
Yeah, which is kind of like basically a sound frozen in time, and that then that frequency pattern can be related to something else. So, for example, one, like somatics, those geometric forms you find in a lot of Gothic buildings, in the glass of churches,
the stained glass,
and but they represent frequencies. And you're saying about, you know, what kind of knowledge did the ancients have? Well, one thing they knew about the universe, they knew about the planets, they knew about sound, and they knew about the power of sound and frequencies a lot more than we did, because they used sound for healing purposes. They used sound for, I mean, we know a lot now, but I think the way that they used it was in such a way but it was a positive effect, for healing, for communication, for thing, you know, like vibration, levitating. You can levitate. And I always wondered, because I read this story once about Tibet and these Tibetan monks, and they got these horns.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're in such a certain shape, and they're really low vibration. And if there was so many, say about 12 of them, such a distance away from a stone, rock, sandstone, a certain vibration blown at the same time with all of the people blowing the horn at the same time, at the same distance, and the mathematics and everything, they can levitate rock. And I did wonder whether or not that may have any impact on that particular kind of area, if vibration was used. Because you can also, like you're saying about like the precision of cutting the rock, but if you use water at a pressure, it can cut through concrete. So what about water? I don't think anybody's ever considered, they always say about copper saws and stuff, but what about if they could actually pressure, because they knew so much, they knew the planets, they knew how somatics worked, they knew how sound worked, they knew how resonance worked, they built the pyramids in the first place. What's to say they didn't know how to pressurize water?
Well, that's actually, I had an interview with a Merwin, it's called Merwin Abbott, and I did an interview with him maybe a year and a half ago, if you look through my thing, but he was a stonemason, or is a stonemason in Arkansas, and he uses pressurized water, like, you know, yeah, high pressurized water to do like engravings and stuff, like on tombstones or whatever. And he thinks that they were pressure pumps to basically then thereby cut stones to use, like he thinks like the amount of pressure that would have been built up or been able to be harnessed from the pyramids into water would have been able to be one of their main technologies of, you know, as like an air slash like air blasting slash water pump.
So, I mean, if they could do a Baghdad battery, why couldn't they do a pressured water, pressurized water? Maybe that explains.
I mean, that definitely could. But I know the okay, so let's talk a little bit about the frequency stuff. So you have a master's in sound frequency, basically, too, or
the okay. So the master's is that's about sound and healing. So that's about using sound as medicine for healing, mental health, basically. So sound and mental health, and how that.
So that's like by
binaural beats. So basically, by brainwave frequencies. So they operate in the sense you feed one frequency in the left ear, another frequency in the right ear, and when they meet in the middle, they turn into another frequency, and that particular frequency basically can either raise your serotonin levels, or it can help you lucid dream, or you can induce DMT experiences, you can induce the frequency. So literally, if you can mimic a frequency, you could mimic the frequency of cannabis, you could mimic the frequency of ayahuasca, you can mimic the frequency of happiness, you can mimic the frequency of depression, you can mimic frequencies. So if you feed that into your brain, then
if you can find that frequency, I guess that's another challenge.
Yeah. But I mean, there's been a lot of research on frequencies, and it does depend, because there's a gentleman called Bruce Tanio, and in 92 he actually invented the technology. He worked for Eastern State University, Washington, and he built apparently he built the world's first frequency monitor. And the average frequency of the human body, he had a resonance of 62 to 68 hertz. But what he also found was that anything below 58 hertz, basically, that's your, if your body frequency drops below that, that's your colds and your flu symptoms. And because obviously, like, we all operate on vibration, energy, Tesla, energy, vibration, and frequency. So he actually measured the frequency of the body, and so the brain frequency of a genius is 80 to 82 megahertz. Okay, so a binaural beat, will you can set a binaural beat at a frequency. So you would use an audio piece of software like Audacity, or you can get binaural beat apps, where you can just set the frequencies, and you would just listen to that frequency for an amount of time, and that can alleviate depression if you want to. Yeah, or it can actually help focus. 40 hertz is really good for helping focus for study. So a lot of students will use a 40 hertz binaural beat with some maybe rainfall or waterfall in the background. And that's a set at that particular hertz. And then that will help them focus. So I'm a big believer in binaural beats. I used to be a sound engineer in the theatre. That's where I started. I started as a sound and lighting engineer.
You should make your own binaural beats.
I do, and I've got some actual meditations that I'm working on at the moment. So that's for another. I got like 4 YouTube channels I'm working on at the moment.
Oh my gosh, Didi, you got it.
So one is going to be like literally frequency healing, that kind of thing. One is history and audio readings, and like I'm going to do Shakespeare stuff, and because I'm an actress as well, so Shakespeare and the poems and Byron and stuff. One is just when I go and film music or I work with musicians, and it's my acting show reel. The other one was Women of BSV, which is about Bitcoin, but I'm giving that up to a friend because I've got a full-time job as a producer in this new TV network. So I do go off a bit kilter a bit because I do quite a lot of stuff. But it all comes back to the same thing, which is basically I love the theatre. And I started off as an actress when I was like 6. I was a model when I was 9 for bridesmaids dresses on big billboards in London and stuff like that, in catalogues and things. And then I just had this love of theatre, and I was lucky enough to get a job in the local theatre, which is a repertory theatre, as a sound and lighting engineer, and trained in the theatre to do that. And I've got this ultimate, I play the saxophone, I used to play guitar, I might pick it up again soon. I produce my own music, and I used to mix loads of shows with orchestras and, you know, just like the actors, and do the shows and work on mixing boards and things and lights. So I have this fascination with frequency, sound and music. Love music, but who doesn't love music? And one of the, like the Mozart effect. So Mozart is one of these really kind of special composers that if you listen to Mozart for like a half an hour or so, you can improve your IQ by about like 40%. It's great. So if you have a test and you want to really ace that test, just listen to a bit of Mozart before you do the test, and probably during the test, and you'll ace.
I remember
them
saying that whole like if you were pregnant, like play Mozart to your unborn fetus.
Mozart's a really good one, yeah, really, yeah.
So I mean, have you read that guy, The Body Electric by Becker?
No, this is somebody that you know about. I don't know about him. I know about this Timio guy, and then these other kind of. But tell me about him. I'm intrigued.
So he's passed away now. This is from the 80s, but basically he figured out that like I in the book I think it's 60 hertz, but maybe I'm wrong on the. But basically, like he took a like a, figured out what a salamander regrows its tail at, like yeah. You know, and then cut off rats' feet and rats' tails, and was able to put them on a seismic like frequency plate. And regrow their feet and their tails with the healthy frequency. And yeah. This other guy, Jerry Tennant, who's the guy who invented laser eye surgery, he's actually based in Dallas. I've tried to get an interview with him a couple times and to no avail. But anyway, he also has picked up Becker's work since Becker's passed away, and been able to figure out that yeah, there are healing frequencies that, you know, we think of ourselves as a bag of chemicals, but really we're a bag of electricity. Like we're like, it's like the morphogenetic field of Rupert.
Yeah. We're just like literally it's a holographic universe, and we're just vibrating atoms.
And yeah, we're vibrating atoms, and you can re-heal your original structure through frequency versus chemicals. Or at least like that's a theory. And that's more along the lines of what I'm into as well. Like that's what I think is really going on. That's why I like energy healing and stuff like this, and sound bowls and stuff like that, because I do think that I mean, if you like, let's say the morphogenetic field is real, meaning that there is an electric blueprint versus, you know, like the atoms and the cells and the DNA, these are all just like, you know, they're material, but they aren't the blueprints. The blueprint is an electric blueprint. And so you can fill out the material and the blueprint, but you have to make sure that the blueprint is recognized and being healthy and reestablished all multiple times, you know. And I do think that it is unhealthy cells are at a certain frequency. And so, like, I've had a lot of dreams and
that's true, because like the Rife frequency, so for example, receptive cancer resonates at 42 megahertz, okay. So that's and there was Rife, what was his name, Dr. Royal R. Rife, and yeah, he's got a Rife frequency. And this is interesting because he's been around for, well, his studies have been around for a long, long time, and he was healing cancer with using frequencies, certain types of cancer. And I think I sent you a video ages ago as well, about 10 years ago, that was on TED about killing cancer cells with frequencies. And this is something that obviously, you know, the drug companies and the pharmaceutical companies don't like, but this is something I believe that the ancients were doing. They knew what frequencies were related to what part of the body. So for example, like the liver resonates at 55 to 60 hertz, lungs resonate from 58 to 65 megahertz, sorry. So megahertz is like 1,000 per second, okay. Mm-hmm. So a death starts at 25,000 megahertz. So what that means is that actually the vibrational frequency is slowed down so much to a point when you're just, that solid form is breaking apart. Okay. But this is also like in the doctorate that I did, and the doctorate's got a really long ass title, to be fair. It does have a really long, which is like Unlocking the Mystical Power of Ancient Technology, Exploring the Metaphysical Effects of Sacred Sound and Its Influence on Our Understanding of the Modern World. So that is a really long ass title. So that's why I got the Doctor in Divinity for, and I did this over lockdown because I just thought it would be hilarious if I was Diddy, Doctor of Divinity, and now I'm Dr.
Diddy. Now you are. I like it.
So I got my Divinity Doctorate. But there's a couple of guys. So one of the guys that I wrote about was it Vladimir? Yeah, so Vladimir, there's three of them. Okay, so I wrote about Paul Langevin, who's a French physicist, and he made a lot of contributions towards sonar and ultrasound and infrasound. And infrasound's one of those things that I'm fascinated with, because infrasound, like the walls of Jericho in the Bible, okay, they came tumbling down, and they're always related to say like the trumpets were blasted, but actually there was an earthquake. But earthquakes, they make a sound at a frequency that is infrasound, which is just below that level of human hearing. So human hearing is like 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, and it's like 19 hertz that infrasound's at. But they use it in films a lot, and in TV, because it's called the fear frequency. So if you're watching a horror movie or you're watching a psychological thriller, 10 times out of 10, there is going to be infrasound within that movie to make you feel scared, okay? So that's what gives you that sensation of, like, feeling paranoid and, like, the hairs standing on the back of your you know, your neck or whatever. And it can cause nausea and stuff like that. So this is something I find quite.
It makes me, you know, it, like all this talk kind of makes me be like, man, we don't even know what soup we're in. We don't know the soup of frequencies that we're swimming in all the time in our cities, and are all like, and all the ways that we're being manipulated with this thing that we're watching this on.
This is why it was from ancient technology all the way to modern day warfare, literally, is basically because it goes starts like so the walls of Jericho were, you know, destroyed by, if it was the trumpets as you believe, then it's kind of an act of war, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or an earthquake is an act of war by natural means. And in Australia during COVID, the Australian police actually used a device, and it's like a LRAD, just like a long range audio device. Okay, and what it does is it works again at a certain frequency and it disperses crowds because it makes you feel as though your skin is on fire. So it penetrates the skin, this frequency penetrates the skin by about 0.5 millimeters, but it heats up the skin and it makes it feel prickly and as if you're on fire. So literally you have to vacate the area in which you're in. So the Air Force and the police have started using these, and there's like another one called ADS, which is like an active denial system. They call them non-lethal weapons. So they have a...
This is similar to the... there was one called the brown noise. Have you heard of that? Where it's like...
White noise, brown noise, pink noise, which is like that.
Yeah, one of them was like it made people like have irritable bowel syndrome, like instantly.
Yeah. So like white noise is quite a nice noise. That, well, it's like the TV noise when the TV's got no reception and you know, mm-hmm. the signal's flicking. But yeah, brown noise, I think, is the one that makes you feel nauseous and sick. And then there's like pink noise, which probably makes you feel quite elated or something. But the other one was this Vladimir Gavril, who was a French engineer, and he was also a physicist. It's funny how it's always physicists that do these really warped experiments. But what he was working on, he kind of took infrasound to a different kind of level, and he was working on 7 hertz. And he made, literally, he did this experiment where he made a giant police whistle with a P in it. And it was a really low, low frequency. And he tried, I think it was like 3.5 hertz or something that he tried to replicate. And it vibrated the walls of the laboratory. So he made something even bigger. Yeah, so this P whistle that he did was huge. It was like, I don't know, 15 foot or something. But the problem with what happened with that was is that the engineer that actually tested the device, he turned it on and he died on the spot because he literally liquefied his innards via the frequency that was generated from this whistle. Now that shows you the power.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, there's opera singers that can break glass, you know? So, I mean, like there's, yeah.
So, because they're matching the frequency of the glass. So if you match, that's insane about it. If you match the frequency. So for example, this, go on. Sorry, I won't interrupt. Go on.
No, go on. Tell us. Yes, for sure.
Well, okay. So going back to COVID. All right. So what we're talking about here is literally matching frequencies to break something. So in this instance, breaking glass. But actually, one of the I wrote about it's like a voice and analysis, spectral analysis, and what they do is they take the vocal and the voice and they put it through like whatever they put it through, some device they put it through, and whatever frequency your voice is at, they can tell what illness you've got. So what they did during COVID is they got patients with COVID and without COVID, and they isolated the frequency of COVID-19, okay? And because they isolated the frequency, they could find a matching frequency to kill the...
Right. So if you put it, if you put it with its match, it'll kill it, or?
Yeah, it just literally dissipated the bad frequency and replaced it with a higher, a better,
you know,
frequency.
It's interesting. And,
well, I was just going to, the thing with these people is they've worked with NASA. So it's not mumbo jumbo kind of conspiracy, this stuff works. And these are called vastwavetechnologies.com, and it was a preliminary research indicated that they had the solution for coronavirus by killing it with frequency, and they could do it, and they proved it, and they showed it. We don't need the drug, like, this is gonna, we don't need them. We need to figure out what the ancients were doing a long time ago, which was using natural medicines, herbal medicines, plants, frequencies. What happened to all the herbal healers? Okay, most of them were women, and what happened to them when the church took over? They were burned at the stake for being witches. Now, in the 15th century, there was a guy, I'm not going to remember his name, but there was a guy in Britain who literally changed the course of the meanings of things in the Bible, and he was basically like an androcentrism, which basically didn't like women. So everybody from the 15th century that was scholars of biblical texts and, you know, of theology and religion were all along this androcentrism, which was basically about, it's Eve's fault that the planet and everybody on it is in the state that we're in. Not that she was like Jesus's rescuer. No, she was the fall of humanity, and that's kind of, you know,
where we're at with it. Well, okay, so I'm really interested in the frequency stuff too, and I think that we're just on the cusp of, like, you know, it's like, and everything I always hear is theory, and then there's a couple of things where, like, if you wanted to get a Rife machine, or if you wanted to get, like, so much of this stuff is super expensive, and then, like, how do I really know if I'm not going to watch a video on a 524k hertz or a 4, like, whatever, like, how do I know it's actually that or not? Like, how do I know, like, somebody, some random YouTuber is not just messing with me and giving me some, you know,
you make your own.
So, like, do you have any, like, that we could
link? I'm an ex sound engineer.
Because, so, like, let's link some stuff on yours down, like, and then. Well,
when I've done my, I mean, you know, for example, you've got, yeah. Like, so this is 528. Okay, so these are great as well, tuning forks. And tuning forks, I mean, this one is a medical tuning fork. I don't know if you can hear it. Does it come over?
Mm-mm, let me really hear it. Near mine.
So that's,
I heard the other one a little bit, but not that one.
So this is 128. But this is a tuning, this is a medical tuning fork. So these, the medical ones have the weights on them, and you can rest that and it will vibrate through the bone, and then it will kind of, it's like, this is what they call the biosphere, the human biosphere.
Yeah, there's some book I read by Elaine.
Tuning the human biofield. Healing with Vibrational Sound Therapy, Eileen Day Makusik.
Yes, her. And then, I've read that book.
And there's some Vibrational Medicine, which is Richard Gerber. So there's quite, I mean, there's a lot of material out there. But again, it's one of those things, you know.
So where would you recommend for people to 101 start with this? And how could they practically start now to start, like, really... instead of just thinking about it in theory, to actually put some kind of thing in to help.
Well, the cheapest and easiest is your little
sound bowls.
So you can get these off Amazon. You could get a gong. Gong baths are amazing. You could just go and have a gong bath, G-O-N-G. Or you could just get yourself a little, you know, a little Buddha bowl like that. And, you know, I mean, you can... you would, you know, I mean, this is a cheap one, really, but you can get really beautiful, again on Amazon, you can get ceramic and
sound bowls, right?
Yeah, so you can get things like that. You could just, again, you can get a tuning fork for about £10 or so. So all you need to do is just look at what frequency it is that you know, V1 to A5 to A, these are kind of realigning, healing the body frequencies, so that kind of thing. 963 is known as the God frequency, which is what Tesla was on about. Okay, so that's also the same DMT frequency, 963 hertz. So you know, there's loads of information out there. I mean, just ask Bard. Go to Bard on Google. Go Google Bard. Can I have Bard, please? And then ask Bard, and Bard will tell you what, you know, if you're feeling depressed.
I don't know if I trust him. He's like, dang.
If you're feeling depressed, it's a great way to get rid of depression without, like, any chemicals
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other one as well, because I love this, because I know, because I've had experiences in the past where, like, a dead relative has visited me, right? So vivid. But what I understand, obviously, about the brain and the fact that the brain works on frequencies, you have to be at a certain frequency within yourself, and depression can, you know, so if you're extremely depressed, you could actually manifest an apparition. Because you want to see that person, that relative, that dead relative. And that kind of goes on the realms of mental health a little bit, but also understanding that the brain works at certain frequencies, and you can actually manipulate yourself by manipulating the frequencies that your brain is listening to. You can actually tune into a certain frequency, and again, this falls in the realms of the infrasound frequencies, where you can actually use that to manifest a visualization and an apparition. And that was tested by a guy called Vic Tandy. Now, in the UK, there used to be a kind of electronics store called Tandy, and this Vic Tandy was a British information technology lecturer from Coventry University, and he was studying infrasound, and he had a fan, a faulty fan, and this fan was operating at this certain level, and he looked a bit more into it, and he recreated the frequency that the fan was operating at. And he found that particular frequency was actually manifesting visualizations, like a hallucination visualization.
Oh, yeah.
So when it comes to mental health, it's not that somebody's mentally ill, it's just that their brain is vibrating at a certain frequency. And if you can rectify that frequency by feeding it, you know, the binaural beats or doing brain...
Or you might could... get it to come if you wanted to see something.
Exactly. You know, I mean, this is like, you can replicate that DMT experience by literally replicating and copying the frequency of the DMT, of the ayahuasca plant, and you get the same feeling. It's, you know, you can go the other way. You can use it for sex if you really wanted to. Do you know what I mean? You can stimulate the body in other ways as well. So
right.
I don't go down.
But you could have like a most orgasmic frequency ever. Yeah, that would be cool. There's awaken your kundalini forever with
like... exactly. But I mean, the other thing is, you know, if everything vibrates and everything operates at a frequency, then you can destroy things, like you say. An opera singer can actually break glass.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is going to be the element that unlocks aging in some kind of way, and I don't know how, but.
Well, apparently there's already a guy from MIT who's been working on a product called NMN, and that is supposed to slow down the aging process. So that's some kind of molecule, a replication of a molecule in the body that actually takes you back to how your body was when you were 20. He's quite... he was on Joe Rogan. It's quite interesting. Whether or not that's... I don't know his name, but he's called NMN. Rivetus, right? Revisol or something. MNN. But he was on Joe Rogan a bit back. He's like 53. He looks about 30. He's really interesting guy, actually. Yeah. And I will send you a link if I remember. Like, if I come across it, I will send you a link for it.
You, cool. Please. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've given people lots of stuff to chew on.
I hope it makes sense. I hope it's interesting for them.
Yeah, I hope they get into sound frequency stuff and start sharing stuff that me and you don't know about it.
Completely. I love learning. Like, I know I don't know enough, and this is why I probably do so much, because I absolutely love learning.
Me too, and I don't know enough either. And if you guys can enlighten us further on anything, please put it in the links. We would love to know more. That would be awesome. And okay, so Dee Dee, tell us how people can find you and what your latest projects are going to be and where to connect with you.
Okay, well, I do have a website, which is Dee Dee Weldon. So it's DIDDYWHELDON.co.uk. And there is a small garb on there, but there's a link tree on there. So the link tree connects to, like, literally every other thing. So you can listen to some of my music. It is what it is. You can see some of my art, because I like doing art. It could link you to my YouTube channel or my Instagram, or, you know, if you want to, more than welcome, please. And History Myths and Mysteries is my history YouTube. Dee Dee Weldon is my just filming music, and I'm going to put some more acting show reels up on there. And
This has been a pleasure. I've loved talking to you. Okay, so we will have to have you back at some point, and I can't wait for your books to be completely out online and all this other.
Clara Rose, yeah.
She has some amazing projects in the making, and I can see Dee Dee only growing from here. So it's been a pleasure having you on, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Bye. Namaste. Thank you very much.
Bye. Cool.